It's time for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Noon, everyone. Welcome to another fine day on planet Earth. Greetings, Mrs. Future.
Greetings, my dear.
So glad you're part of our movie.
Aw, me too. Don't we have fun?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so many things to share. Yeah. And Bobby.
Yes.
You're out there. I hear you're not feeling so well today. What's going on?
I tested positive. You know, we had guests here from Hawaii, and they had picked up something at the airport on the way here. And so a couple days after they were here, then Katya got this cough.
Symptoms of Omicron?
Yes. And then we had the tests. So we tested all the tests, and yes, he came up positive. And then later, Katya came up positive. And then later, I came up positive a couple days after that.
Great. I heard it's as contagious as measles.
Well, especially in an airplane. I mean, that's the place to get sick,
right? So what's your experience of that?
Well, it looks like Gert Vandenbosch was talking months ago about variant of Omicron that could totally evade vaccinated people. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that BA4 and 5, is particularly 5.
The latest variant,
It has total immune escape from the vaccine.
This is the problem
everyone is
of vaccines aiming so narrowly, right? That they aim so narrowly at just one tiny little variant that they miss everything else that comes afterwards. Mutations are multivariant.
Well, we need a new strategy, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, something that works.
I don't know if you've been following Fauci. You know,
I heard he's sick, too.
Yeah, he's sick too. So what he does, he takes Paxlovid, and then he
which is the Pfizer pill to counteract COVID, right?
It's the only one that they allowed to be endorsed by the Food and Drug Administration.
It's $750 for this drug. Yeah. But anyway, and then he gets a rebound.
Well, that's sort of what happens with Paxlovid.
And so what does he do again? He takes Paxlovid a second time. This is off-label because they don't recommend taking it a second time. Huh. But he does.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he gets another rebound.
Another rebound.
It's crazy.
So what is it? The cure brings back the symptoms again?
Well, what it does, it primes the immune system to look for a different way to come in. And it actually does antibody enhancement. It looks like that's what the Paxlovid is doing. Huh. So it's kind of backfiring.
What does antibody enhancement do in terms of treating the disease?
It's supposed to be a good thing, right?
It's bad. So what it does, it kind of like opens up the immune system, and the immune system, again, falsely responds in the wrong way, and it allows this virus to come in even and infect the cells even more.
Oh, so it actually stimulates more creation of virus rather than more creation of virus fighters.
Yes, it creates the wrong fighters and allows the virus to replicate. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a big fiasco. Yeah.
Oops. Yep, all those experts were wrong.
Well, while we're on the topic.
And all those social media companies censoring all those experts were wrong.
Well, it's evolving. It's an evolving mosaic. And there's an interesting cast of characters from Fauci to Zelenko, who sadly passed away this week.
Yeah, Dr. Zelenko.
Yes.
The Hasidic doctor who first broke the protocol for recommending ivermectin before all of the excrement hit the fan and it became such a hot potato. And now you can't even say the word on social media without getting some kind of flag.
Yeah.
But
he was accused of using battlefield medicine to fight the virus. Mm-hmm. That use what works and use it now.
But that's what doctors always did before this craziness set in. Mm. You know, doctors were actually concerned with the well-being of their patients.
We have clinical trials today.
Variety of solutions to offer, you know, anything from vitamins to vaccinations.
So. Yeah, well, we just have more cautious today. medicine by your seat of your pants is helpful in emergencies. And to many, this would be considered an emergency. Mm-hmm. Many didn't quite see it that way.
Yeah. Well, it really does go to show you that here we were thinking that medicine was getting finer and finer at individual recognition.
Well, that
and
is
treatment.
True. It has
and
become more individualized.
And then our government somehow embraces this inappropriate one-size-fits-all solution. And then we go through this giant fiasco where our civil rights are eliminated and our doctors are disempowered. And there's just a whole power struggle going on for the truth. It's such a statement about human beings and how inappropriate we are when we're afraid.
Fear.
Yeah.
Fear. And fear is a huge one.
Yeah.
And so much of it is fear of
death.
Yes, yeah. It's fear of death. Yes. Which
the ultimate fear.
The ultimate fear, yeah, which has been hard for us lately because we've had loved ones passing lately, just like quite a few.
Yeah, here we are really appreciating the beautiful life that we live, and we've been losing one bright light a month pretty much this year. Yes. It's in our circle, and I'm sure that we're like everybody else. There's a lot of people dying now.
The latest, our friend Celestine Starr, who just passed yesterday. And she was one of the closest persons I know who could really maybe communicate on the other side and connect the boundaries.
A sensitive, as she called herself. And she did give me messages from the other side that were really profound and touching.
So what happens when messengers go to the other side? Do they reach back?
Well, we'll have to ask him, Al.
Well, I think, you know, it would be really good for our society, for our species, I think, is if we really understood the life-death cycle, really understood what happened, and it was clear, and you know, I've often wondered whether or not you can even apply rationality to the other side. Does it even work? Is it a realm that can be rational? And I talked to a friend who had training in this realm by some Tibetan monks, and he told me, yes, there's room for rational thinking on the other side.
Oh, good to know.
So
keep
this
that
is an
in
active
mind
thing.
Next time.
If
you're
we really understood it, a lot of the fear around death might shift us all to a more enlightened perspective of the world.
You know, I have spoken to many people who are in the business of accompanying people at their last moments, who have said very much the same thing, that so many people are unprepared, and that makes them afraid. Mm. And therefore, they go into a state of ambiguity that actually doesn't help them. And giving them a state of calm, peace, serenity, and confidence is actually a beautiful way to help them transition. So it's time to go to a break, and then we've got headlines and phone calls. And
all right, let's bring it on.
Bring it on.
All right, see you all in a minute.
Be right back.
Two, three.
Look for headlines on drfutureshow.com/links.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We are an interactive radio talk show, so let's bring on some of our call-ins, shall we?
Absolutely.
Who do we have first?
We've got Firefall. Hi, Firefall.
Firefall, welcome
to
the show.
Hope it works this week.
What's up?
Good morning, guys.
Yay.
Good afternoon.
We couldn't hear you last week.
Yeah.
I was listening to a lot of black media and covering a lot of the stuff that's going on. And I mentioned before, and I've gotten stomped on for it, that I listen to a lot of black media, because if people want to know what black people in America think, they have to go to the source. So one of the things I want to bring up, now, I haven't gotten you guys mad, I don't think, yet, but there's always a first time.
Are you going to try today?
we'll take that chance. Do I feel lucky? Okay.
We always have the volume control going on, you know.
Yeah.
But we do have an open conversation, keep it real, man.
That's
the main thing.
All right. Okay, what I don't stick my beak into is none of my business. But I have done the same thing that not only I've always done years and years ago, and with the onset of the COVID epidemic up until today, I haven't changed a thing. except that I'm not stupid, so yeah, I wear a mask when I go to the store. I spend as little time around face-to-face and enclosures as possible, and I never wear a mask if I'm not around anybody.
Okay, that seems fairly sensible. Yeah,
No brain damage.
You're
as
within
far
normal
as,
parameters, I'd say, for most people.
Right on. Yeah, right on. So the problem I'm having is nobody's 1% of what I see is wearing masks anywhere, and usually they're outside alone when they're wearing a mask and doing the same stupid masking. But I go in a grocery store, right? The employees and everybody's not wearing masks. So, yeah, I wear a mask. If you go in a grocery store and nobody's hardly in there, there's three people, right? I'm not going to get COVID that way. So, but I want to say another thing, too, that probably the part that's going to get you guys mad, and that's the part about, I think, that when they had the Gay Pride Month, is it over or is it still going on?
Oh, it's July June. Now. It's
The month has changed.
It's somebody
it's
else
got
now.
A new theme.
I'm not sure what the theme is.
Yeah, right. Whatever the theme is, because they have the whole alphabet, and then they have to go through every possible matrix of combination of the alphabet for every type, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That said, I'm trying to be a little funny anyway. I have an issue with, I believe, that the events that were solely homosexual males were targeted.
You mean
somebody put the...
Monkeypox?
I think somebody put out the Eli Roth movie, Cabin Fever, in the punch bowl, like in the movie, because they were targeting gay men, because there has not been one citation of any case of anyone but strictly gay men who only associate with gay men. There is no crossover like with AIDS. However, they did begin the AIDS announcement in 1981 saying, oh, you don't have to worry about it. So I really don't want to get into whether people have to worry about getting it or not. I'm straight, and I'm not really currently in a relationship. I have been with women in the past, but right now it's just kind of dry times.
Okay.
But I'm saying that I think that somebody targeted these guys.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's a targeted thing. Comment. Well, it's interesting. I do have a quote I'm going to be playing shortly. Let me cue that up, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
That was on No Agenda Sunday on this issue.
Okay. Right.
Also, I think the crux of the biscuit for me is, was it a gay monkey that connected with a...
Oh, brother.
Anyway, we won't
Ow.
Get
it. We have a whole bunch of topics that we're on, and so we're going to keep the comments down to kind of a minimum. I'll give you a couple minutes each, but we do have other people on the line, so I'm going to say hi. Hello, Pure Heart. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Dr. and Mrs. Future. And I guess it's Billy in San Francisco, is it?
It's
Bobby.
Bobby.
Yeah. I reckon. Okay, lemon and honey with cayenne pepper and 0.2 milligrams of ivermectin per kilogram of body weight per day for 5 days. You'll be fine. But anyway, the big scary.
I'm a big believer in lemon and cayenne pepper.
Yeah, vitamin D and copper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, just not a big deal. Last week you guys were talking about air conditioning and having solar power kind of obviated that, precluded it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with the mini-split air conditioners, you could probably add 4 panels and have air conditioning.
Only in the headphones.
Yeah.
And in the old Home Power magazines, these guys use ammonia chillers like the big guys do.
Mm-hmm.
Small chillers using like the propane flame.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't even notice the increase in propane consumption. So chilled water would just need a circulating pump and a fan.
Wow.
But that would make it possible, too, plan B.
That's nice.
And
that's
then
nice.
The last thing is hats off to Dr. Future for... And making good his threat to NASA. They did not meet his demands, and look what happened to Capstone. So I'm curious what Dr. Future has next. So don't cross Dr. Future.
Yeah. What would you like to see happen next yourself? What would be a good scenario for you?
I'd like to see the Chinese get more credit for that moon mission they pulled off to sample return, but that's a good thing.
Uh-huh.
That's a tour de force that should have gotten more coverage. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. They are in the news this week in that they are initiating a number of very ambitious space projects.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I've got. I know you got a lot of callers.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for your heart. Keep going here.
I just wanted to add to the dear heart. I ran across Dr. Mobing shows this research out of Germany where they are using dandelion leaf tea. And apparently it binds to the receptor binding domain of the spike protein. And so it kind of just encapsulates it and prevents it from replicating. And so I've been taking that. It's not the best tasting tea, but it definitely helps for sure.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
So you're in what, day 7 of your encounter here?
Yeah, it's been exactly a week since I first tested positive, because I tested positive a week ago. Uh-huh. And then I tested again yesterday morning, still came up positive. So anyway.
Well, how long do you think it'll last in your estimation?
It comes in waves, you know, mm-hmm. like sometimes I feel great. And then if I exert myself, I got to lay down, take a sleep.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's how recovery is, right? Your system's a little spent trying to get better, so you got to give it some extra Z's.
How does this compare to a normal flu?
It's not as bad as flus I've had in the past, that's for sure. Mostly it's this cough that I have.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Coughs and then, are annoying.
You know, and getting heat and sunlight is very important. Because it's foggy this time of year here in San Francisco, I don't get enough sunlight. Mm-hmm. So I have to supplement with infrared, and that helps a lot. I'm trying to build a sauna downstairs, and I haven't done it yet. And so I wish I had that. I know that would help a lot.
Oh, so you're just dependent on the old-fashioned sunshine.
Yes. So today it's sunny. 4th of July, it's always cloudy. Sure enough, it was cloudy yesterday, but
yeah,
today it's
sure
sunny.
Enough.
So I'm out in the sun first. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Well, keep it up, buddy. Take good care of yourself.
Okay, a couple of little news clips for this week regarding to what we've discussed so far. Here's one on the Fauci rebound and the antiviral that Bobby was mentioning earlier.
Dr. Anthony Fauci had a resurgence of COVID-19 symptoms after a five-day course of Paxlovid treatment. Fauci is 81 and said he first tested positive for COVID 2 weeks ago with very minimal symptoms. Once he began to feel worse and given his age, doctors prescribed Paxlovid. After the five-day course, Fauci tested negative for 3 consecutive days, but then had a positive test on the 4th day. He subsequently started feeling really poorly and much worse than in the first go-around, he said. Doctors put Fauci back on Paxlovid, and after 4 days, he says he feels reasonably good, but not without symptoms.
Okay.
And we have another clip on a very interesting thing happening in Australia, where people are getting compensated for having reactions to the vaccine.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Check this out. Here.
Let's hear that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been a long road to recovery for Matty John.
It's a really uncomfortable and quite a frightening experience.
He felt like he was having a heart attack 2 days after getting the Pfizer vaccine.
I just got this sharp pain that I've never experienced before in the center of my chest.
Diagnosed with severe pericarditis, he was off work for 10 weeks.
You're constantly worrying, I suppose, that anxiety around, I suppose, we're talking about your heart.
Maddie's not alone. It's estimated 79,000 people have suffered adverse reactions to vaccines. Now the government's offering compensation. Claims under $20,000 will need evidence from your doctor. Claims over $20,000 assessed by a team of legal experts. The highest figure reserved for only the most serious of cases.
I think it could cost the government a lot of money.
Daniel Opare works at Shine Lawyers. He's looked closely at the government scheme.
If you do suffer pericarditis, it can result in you being out of pocket. You might have to see a cardiologist, you might need procedures. So it is definitely appropriate that there is a vaccination scheme there to compensate those people.
But like all schemes, there are limitations. To make a claim, you must spend at least one night in hospital. And that's a clause that makes Matty John ineligible. He was admitted to hospital twice, but never stayed
the night.
That is a little bit frustrating and out of pocket a fair bit, but in saying that too, it is what it is, and that's life.
The scheme is now open.
Okay, that's it. That interesting?
Wow. Very interesting. And I just want to give credit to No Agenda Show, who collected that clip, both those last clips.
The producers. Right.
The producers, and for keeping us all in the loop about what's going on outside our little myopia of USA with news reporting facts in the aftermath of our last few years.
So, and we do produce stuff for them, too.
That's true. We do. We're all in it together here. Get the truth out and keep an open mind. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. So nice. Great July 4th here in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fireworks, mostly not official on the beaches. It's a real Keystone Cop scene out on the beach where people are being chased. And
for fireworks? They're being
fireworks.
Chased.
Oh, yeah. They're illegal, you know, to fire fireworks on the beach. But
so what were they doing? They were like lighting them off and running away?
Some light it off and the cops would go to get that.
Launch and ditch.
Yeah. Then the guys who light the fireworks would be off at somewhere else by the time the cops get to the first bunch and lighting them off over there. And so the cops got, you know, smart and split into two groups to try to get them both.
4th of July.
Yeah, you know, it's, I say, if I had a night camera, it could be a real Keystone Cops movie.
I tell you, doing everything possible to suppress our memory that we're all sovereigns without subjects here. Yeah. We have some amount of free will. But, of course, you have to be safe. But if you can't be safe on the beach by the water, I mean, where can you be safe? Nowhere? It's not safe to be unsafe?
Safety first, Mrs. Future.
I believe in safety, but I also believe we're in a period of authority overreach. So let's go back a little bit to trusting humans to be smart enough to not hurt
each other. You trust we're smart enough to figure out some of our big issues, like inflation, for example. Everything's getting more expensive. Mm-hmm. Can we figure this out? What's really going on?
Which we are you talking about, my friend?
Another clue we heard on No Agenda was a little quote from Milton Friedman 40 years ago on the cause of inflation.
Okay.
Listen to this little
clip. Famous
here.
Economist.
Milton Friedman, years ago.
In the modern era, the important next step is to recognize that today governments control the quantity of money, so that as a result, inflation in the United States is made in Washington and nowhere else. Of course, no government any more than any one of us likes to take responsibility for bad things. We're all of us human. If something bad happens, it wasn't our fault. And the government is the same way, so it doesn't accept responsibility for inflation. If you listen to people in Washington talk, they will tell you that inflation is produced by greedy businessmen, or it's produced by grasping unions, or it's produced by spendthrift consumers, or maybe it's those terrible Arab sheiks who are producing it. Now, of course, businessmen are greedy. Who of us isn't? Trade unions are grasping. Who of us isn't? And there's no doubt that the consumer is a spendthrift. At least every man knows that about his wife. But none of them produce inflation for the very simple reason that neither the businessman, nor the trade union, nor the housewife has a printing press in their basement on which they can turn out those green pieces of paper we call money. Only Washington has that printing press, and therefore only Washington can produce inflation.
Only Washington can produce inflation.
Yeah, and the way that they do it now, of course, is by giving the banks permission to just make as much debt as possible. They don't even have to have reserves of deposits anymore. They can just fabricate money out of thin air and not owe anybody anything.
Why should we have inflation then?
Because the government basically is using it to pay for whatever policies they want to take on. And then they pretend that there's such a thing as a money supply that is so limited that the taxpayers have to pay it back. But actually, they just keep making up new money to pay for new bills, to pay for policies that they just come up with. So it's all funny money made up out of thin air.
That's official funny money.
Yeah, because it's not tied to anything that they can't just expand with the stroke of a pen.
And the people that are profiting are the banks, or the central banks, actually, distributing the money.
Sure.
And
they can turn a dollar of deposits into $100 worth of debt, and then they can charge the taxpayers for it.
Yeah, the banks can go to the window at the Federal Reserve and borrow any amount of money that they claim that they need, and they only have to pay it back at the current interest rate, which is very, very low, or almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And so it's essentially free money for the banks to lend out that money again.
Yeah. But, you know, on No Agenda, they try to explain how there's been some kind of rebellion going on in the part of the central banks against the Fed, because they don't like the policies. And the fact that there are no reserves means that the Fed doesn't have any leverage anyway. And somehow, I didn't quite understand the logic, but the banks are calling on the Fed in ways that are not endorsing the Fed's policy or something like that. Hmm. It's all out of my pay range.
Well, maybe there's a clue in this. Here's another little clip. I got a clip. This one, however, is on inflation protesters that are going on.
Oh, you mean people who wish their money wasn't being eroded into valueless pieces of paper?
Check it out.
Meanwhile, hundreds gathered in Tel Aviv on Saturday to protest against the rising prices in Israel. Protesters carried signs blasting the rising gas and housing prices. Disruption during the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine have driven prices up in the country that already ranks as one of the most expensive places to live in. Tel Aviv is Israel's financial and cultural epicenter.
We are here because the prices of everything are rising in Israel. It's just becoming impossible to live here. And this is why, as you can see, so many of us came out tonight and to shout what we cannot achieve. We cannot achieve even rent for our apartment. We cannot achieve the basic price for the commodities we want to purchase in the supermarket.
People here in Tel Aviv, they pay more than 50% of their salary for housing.
So inflation is not just in America, it's worldwide. So it would be something that all the governments would have to be doing then, wouldn't it?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz for a long time has been saying that the disaster capitalism practiced by our government and that they're trying to now move the center over to China is really about turning the monetary system into a debt-based system that can be controlled by the central bank. So the goal right now is basically to ruin cash money so that nobody uses it. And just like happens in war economies where your money can't buy food anymore, they have to flush out the old currency and replace it with something new. Mm. And that is definitely the big plan for the globalists, is get us all hooked on believing that our current money is useless and our new money, that there are saviors and they'll give it to us the way they want.
You won't know anything, but you'll be happy.
There you go. You ready to talk to Billy Sunshine?
Sure. Billy.
Hello, Billy Sunshine.
Yeah. Hey, Billy.
Hello, my loves. How are you guys today?
Pretty blissful.
Yeah.
We're doing okay. Yeah.
You know, our cloud is floating above all of this chaos in many ways. We have a small footprint and a large overview. And so we basically take it all in.
I definitely like the footprint at the beach. I like that.
Isn't that nice? Well, I think my family, you know, my grandfather bought that in the 30s. So just the fact that we've been able to keep harmony in our family has been very good for all of us.
A miracle, even, maybe.
Yeah, probably lots of miracles.
The reason I called is, and I heard you complaining about how awful our government is handling inflation, I called to tell you, hey, it's worldwide, but then you played the tape about Israel.
Yeah,
so it is worldwide.
Right. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you what it doesn't tell me, because I'm not a conspiratorial person. I don't believe it's a conspiracy of that, you know, all the banks have gotten together and all the... It's just greed. It's simple greed. I'm happy to say, by the way, the price of oil went down a lot today. It's now below $100 a barrel.
Wow. Wow. That is impressive.
Yeah. So
it's hard to get excited about paying $6.69 for gasoline, you know.
Well, that's why I drive an electric car, you see, because I'm smart. It's more about really COVID and the supply chain that's causing all this inflation. And by the way, it's about how the Fed was so generous to us all, made us all rich for so long, so that Bitcoin could go to 60,000. It's now 19. And the stock market was crazy, and now it makes more sense. Mm. Right?
I don't think any of your logic holds there, Billy. I don't know who's feeding you these numbers or letting you know what interacts with what to create those numbers, but it doesn't work that way. When there's more money in the money supply, then prices go up. When there's less goods in the supply chain, prices go up. When both of those things happen together, prices go up. But the big factor is that our leaders are creating these problems. They are creating the crises in the supply chain. They are creating the crises in the money supply. They are creating the chaos and confusion in terms of people being able to anticipate the future. And they are giving the banks all of the powers to create more and more debt without it being based on responsibility to the
people. So was there a meeting? Was there a meeting where they got together and decided they were going to do this, or they just all know to do it in all these different countries?
Well, I mean, think I if you start following conspiracy. The, if you start listening to investment analysts such as Catherine Austin Fitz, you can see that the globalist policy has been underway for a long time. It goes back to the creation of the Eurozone. The OECD back in the 90s, right, creating the euro. There's definitely a whole bunch of elitists, globalist leaders who are interested in turning the money of the future into something that is controlled by a few regional central banks. And they've been doing their best to destabilize the world to make that seem like a good idea for a long time.
This is like a 100-year plan, huh?
Well, just 2 weeks ago at the World
Economic Forum.
Yeah. Go ahead. No. They had the World Economic Forum in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And if you listen to what they were announcing to all the leaders of the world,
yeah,
they're saying they're going to take advantage of this crisis in the Ukraine and the pandemic and how to maximize profit from that. And so,
yeah. But yeah, everybody's taking advantage. Yeah, it's true.
Not us. We're not in a position to take advantage.
You're not charging me any more to listen to this program, and I appreciate it.
That's right. We're charging you 1,000% more, but, you know, 1,000% of nothing is still nothing.
Oh, you are good at math. All right, kids, I love you.
Have fun at the dog park there, Billy.
And we're going to go to our
later.
Break.
Right. Bye-bye. Be right back. Okay, welcome back. This is hilarious. This is a 36-second clip about why Paris Hilton did not go to the G7 conference and DJ.
There, even though she was invited
personally by Biden. Here's what she had to say.
She was
going to
DJ?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was asked by President Biden and their team to go DJ for that summit dinner with all the leaders of the world.
G7.
But it was the same night of Britney's wedding. And then I'm like, no, I'm not going to miss that. They're like, we'll send a helicopter and you can fly back and forth. And I'm like, I'm not going to be the one landing in and out of Britney's wedding in a helicopter. Like, come on. So I had to cancel. I'm the president.
Did you tell them why you were canceling, that it was an emergency? Well, it was an emergency because Britney Spears, Spears was getting...
There you go.
There you go. The forces that drive politics.
Yeah. Britney Spears' wedding is more important than the G7 to Paris.
Well, who knew that Paris Hilton was a DJ? I didn't even realize she was a DJ.
Yeah,
that's one
of her
pretty
things.
Cool.
She's actually got a purpose at the parties now.
She's always had a purpose. She's an icon.
You're right. Without her, you didn't have a party. So there was some space news I'd like to go over a little bit.
Oh, getting started in the space.
We did kind of start in space.
We started with the satellites and the moon.
Yeah. So a satellite about the size of a microwave oven has successfully broken free from its orbit around Earth Monday and is headed towards the moon. And that's the latest step in NASA's plan for landing astronauts on the moon in the next 5 years or so. Okay, now this was a journey from New Zealand. This is the first time NASA launched a rocket from New Zealand. It was launching the Capstone satellite, and it was launched by a company called Rocket Lab, and the name of their rocket was called an Electron. Yeah.
So they launched an Electron into space,
Names here. An Electron, a company called Rocket Lab, launched a small Electron rocket with the Capstone satellite.
That's a pretty novel kind of rocket, right?
It's very small. It's very small, very much cheaper than anything that even Elon Musk is doing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this entire mission was $33 million.
Right, yeah.
And often the launch costs are much higher than that.
Yeah, like I vaguely remember when Elon Musk was first getting started, his first contract with NASA was to get a vehicle that could successfully be repurposed after it was launched one time. And so his first contract was to have 10 launches, which would be $100 million each. And in those 10 launches, he would have to provide three of them for NASA to do some kind of space mission. So he had 10 launches to get into space successfully. And by the 10th launch, he did. And those were $100 million each. So now this launch today, the Electron mission with the Capstone satellite going to the moon.
Right, right.
Is a $32.7 million launch.
Exactly, exactly.
About and a third.
It's a breakthrough to create these small little satellites that can go to the moon and stay in a lunar orbit, giving us information over there for years from this. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that I believe they have a second stage to the rocket. The first stage is called the Electron. The next stage is called a Photon.
Sure, that's the name of Electron, the middle section Photon. Of the launch vehicles.
So the Electron takes you to orbit and the Photon gets you on the trajectory to the moon.
Right. Yeah, the Electron gets you out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then the Photon gets you out of the gravity belt and onto your gravity-based trajectory to the moon.
Exactly. And then the Capstone is the satellite itself with all its sensors giving you information about the moon.
Right. And that is going to arrive in November. So, you know, figure how slowly it's going as a satellite between here and the moon. Yeah. You know, it's just been hurled.
It's tantamount to ships at sea. You know, it takes a long time, maybe even a little longer than ships at sea.
I think it's a little bit like we've used a catapult to launch a satellite to the moon. And it's going kind of slow, but it's on the right trajectory.
Right.
So it's going to get there in November.
And using a minimal amount of energy to get it going.
Now it's just gravity and momentum.
If you don't mind going slow, it's cheaper.
Right, right.
Jeez, it's just like our mail. Book rate, please.
That's right. So the Capstone is going to get there, and then it is going to have a unique purpose, which we did report on last week. The Capstone satellite will be orbiting the moon on a, what do they call it, a rectilinear halo orbit.
Exactly, Mrs. Future. Very good.
See, I'm paying attention.
Yeah, to be totally official, it's called near rectilinear.
Oh, okay. I was close.
Near. For the non-technical of you out there, that's a stretched out egg shape with one end of the orbit passing close to the moon and the other very far from it.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be passing over the south pole of the moon, I believe.
Oh, well, the south pole is where the action is on the moon. That's where the water is. You know, that's where probably the helium-3, you know, which will be the fuel of the future that will put gas and oil ultimately out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Helium-3.
Is this helium-3 in a shadowed part of the moon that never gets light, so it's always frozen?
That's a secret, Mrs. Future.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, helium-3. Just Google it. No, the shadow part is the water.
Uh-huh.
It's the shadow is where the frozen ice water is.
Yeah.
It's been preserved for all these years in the cold.
Right. And, of course, that is the focus of the Chinese missions on the moon.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's where the resource. If you can actually create the stuff you need to further expand into space from the moon without having to go back to the Earth, by all means, you know. I mean, it's a lot of energy to get down to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can create stuff there, including energy, you know, you need a lot of energy as well as food and resource.
Unless you're a robot.
Well, you still need resources. You just need slightly different resources. You don't need to breathe oxygen, mm-hmm. but you do need to breathe electrons. You know, everyone has their breath.
Isn't that what photosynthesis is breathing electrons? No, that's breathing photons.
It is photons. It's photonic, yeah.
Photosynthesis.
Nature. Yeah, where does nature use electrons? For 10 points, nature use electrons?
It's when photons travel through space and they hit your retina or any material, it turns into a photoelectron. And then those photoelectrons actually become electrons.
You'll be exchanged for normal electrons in the system of energy
That's
exchange.
Cool. So they're
photo
kind
electrons,
of
some.
It, for yeah. some reason, what's coming to mind is a prism, and so on one side of it, it's like a beam of electricity, and on the other side of it, it's a spectrum of lights.
Well, what turns the photon into an electron? A lens, or a nerve?
Well, you know, it's just in the quantum shell, it's just that little bit of the photon actually gives the electron another spin and a little bit of energy. And that's how photosynthesis takes that photon that's traveling through space that has no mass. And all of a sudden, it kind of shoves the electron and it creates what's called a photoelectron process. And then that gives the electron a little more energy and changes its shell alignment, and it gives a little more energy, and then it causes the hydrogen to combine with oxygen to create water, or vice versa. In photosynthesis, it's splitting of water, so it's cracking water.
That's really interesting at the level, just an analogy. It's almost like the electron is this little teeny piece of mass, and the photon is a ray of light, and so the electron is sort of sunbathing, and as soon as it gets that little ray of light, then it's energized to become something else.
That's really photosynthesis.
That's right. You mentioned that because I did pick out a story this week called Artificial Photosynthesis and how it can produce food in complete darkness.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Artificial photosynthesis.
Uh-huh. And what kind of food does it produce in complete
food
darkness?
Food production so that we can have food on Mars.
Photosynthesis without photons.
I know. I thought it got my attention. I wasn't quite sure I understood exactly what they were talking about here, but definitely worth further investigation. And I put it in for our audience to further check out.
Oh, well, we'll have to read about that. So it looks like you can produce...
I haven't had a chance to delve into it yet, but it looks...
You can produce algae. You can produce mushrooms.
Well... Well, I can see they use a two-step electrocatalytic process that converts carbon dioxide, electricity, and water into acetate. Acetate.
I thought that was bad for you.
Well, that's the form of the main component of vinegar.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of food-producing organisms that consume acetate in the dark.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. So we're feeding little darklings some acetate, and they're spitting out some, what does photosynthesis make, sugar?
It makes sugar. Yes.
Wow. Amazing.
So it sounds like mushrooms. You know, you can grow mushrooms in the dark.
Yeah,
right?
We have the answers, don't we? Mushrooms. And this is very interesting. Anyway, this is it's an electrocatalytic process, and combined with solar panels to generate the electricity to power the electrocatalysis, this could be a truly efficient hybrid organic inorganic system.
And this
that
is
could create sunlight into food.
The Dr.
18
Future
times more efficient than today's
on
food.
KSCO.
18 times more efficient than
Santa
normal.
Santa Cruz going to our break. We'll be right back.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We are live in Santa Cruz, and I got a question from my mother in Montreal. She wants to know how Bobby's symptoms, more about your symptoms and how you're feeling and what you're doing about it right now. I guess that a lot of people would like to know that, considering that this latest version of Omicron is more contagious than most of the previous versions, maybe almost as much as measles, and everyone might get it. What should you do?
Yeah, I would say if you're going to go shopping or anything or interact with people in the public, you should probably wear a mask if possible.
We're trying to lay low a little bit too, maybe, not go out so much.
But actually, I should send you another study. They're finding that actually Omicron protects you from long COVID better than Delta. So it's not that it's so bad getting one of these Omicron variants, because it will protect you in the future and prevent you from getting long COVID. That's what the data is coming out to be. But to minimize the effects of it, definitely you have to prop up your immune system and make sure you're eating properly. And it seems like sugar and carbohydrates are things that deprive you of omega-3, certain minerals and vitamins in your body. So I would follow the complete protocol that the FLCCC is putting out.
That's on their website?
On their website. Mm-hmm. And just follow that. And then I just sent you guys this article about dandelion leaf.
Dandelion leaf. You're doing that?
Yeah. And it works very well. It's surprising. And if you look at the science that was done, research in Germany, it's surprising how well it works. And it probably works even better than ivermectin or other things.
But do you do it instead of ivermectin?
No. I do everything. I throw the whole kitchen sink at it.
You're like Joe Rogan, huh?
Yes. But then if I exert myself, then, yeah, I have to lie down and relax. And
when your body wants to rest, let it rest.
Yes. And it seems as though I really need infrared heat somehow. In order to get your thymus gland to actually produce and train T cells. So there's B cells that come from your bone marrow and they migrate to your thymus gland, which is your chest area. They found out that if you heat that area up and you actually promote a fever, then your immune system will build up and train your T cells for antibodies to recognize Omicron or any other variant in the future. And so you have a broad spectrum antibody response when you do that. But if you take an antipyretic like, you know, Tylenol or acetaminophen or aspirin, in fact, you're counteracting the normal body reaction to heat up the thymus, your chest, to produce your antibodies properly. So if you're running around trying to chill your body, you probably will not build up the proper antibodies.
Well, it looks like you got some fans out there. Somebody you inspired the Big M to create a new term, dandymectin. He's all excited about the NIR light, man. NIR light. Yeah. That's near infrared light, right? That's another area you are experimenting with.
Yeah. You know, like every morning, I get so much fog here, so we don't get in the morning.
Yeah, we've had some lately up here, too.
Yeah, so it doesn't burn off till the afternoon.
Yeah.
So what I have to do is I just take an infrared lamp. They're inexpensive. They range from $35 up to $750 for big panels or whatever. Yeah. But you don't have to spend that much. You just put these little lamps on your head. And it's transcranial. In other words, it goes through the cranium of the bone in the head. And it goes in about as much as 8 centimeters.
Into your brain?
Yeah, to the center, to the pineal gland. So,
the center of your brain. Huh?
Yeah, so Dave Asprey, what he does every morning is he puts it on what you would consider your third eye. And you can just put it above your nose in the middle. And you put that for half a minute to up to 5 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. And then you start moving it around your head and I start waking up.
That's a stimulant then for your brain.
Yeah, and it creates energy. It creates nitric oxide. So it's essential to have the ATP cycle in order to create energy. It's like photosynthesis for the brain.
Really?
Yeah. And
your brain is actually utilizing this infrared to create energy?
Yes. And then what you do is you move it to the back of your head, which is called the venum, which is the little point in the back of your head, and you put it there, and all of a sudden, I get this surge of energy. Like, it wakes me up. If I'm drowsy in the morning, I just put it right there, and within 15, 20 seconds, it's like, I'm wide awake. No way I can go back to sleep.
Near infrared light. And cool. Well, we'll send us a link. We'll put it on our webpage of what frequencies and stuff that we could. We got a caller.
Sure.
Okay. Right there.
Go ahead.
Okay. Right. Bring on the callers. Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah. All right. We have Marcia from Los Gatos.
Hey, Marcia. Hello, all you beautiful people.
How are you doing?
Marcia.
I'm doing good. I'm sad to hear about Bobby in San Francisco getting what goes around, and as you said, dandelion leaf, I thought, oh, well, that's good for the liver, isn't it, you know? So then I looked it up, and it is. It's also very high in potassium. So it talks about both the leaf and root have been used for centuries to treat liver and gallbladder conditions. as well as digestive problems. So I wanted to say it's just a wonderful thing. This is the kind of thing you just walk along and you pick it and you eat it raw. Young leaves raw or lightly cooked in the spring. I forage. So I go out and I eat lots of things. And one of the ones for the lungs, something that's mucilage, something that's make it like egg white there in your lungs so you can cough things out of your lungs. Purslane would be something. It grows wild as a weed. The Hispanics love it. They put it in lots of their foods. Marshmallow root is full of mucilage as well as fenugreek. All of those will thicken as they steep. I just wanted to say that I live in the woods with 40 redwoods in every direction.
That sounds pretty healthy. Fantastic.
Wow, wonderful.
I
go along and I eat raw clover and dandelion grows, chamomile grows here, plantains of all kinds. Those are anti-inflammatories.
How about the dandelion root itself? Is that medicinal?
Oh, yes, that is also. Definitely so. I think the whole plant, even the flowers. And it's good for to prevent urinary stones. So, yeah, the root and the leaves and the whole thing is just so fun to read about. All the herbs are just given to us. The birds just drop seeds and they see things. I love it when the miner's lettuce is growing really wild and you can just get a whole salad. Well, I love you guys and Bobby. Wow. I'll be praying for you and seeing you happy doing somersaults again.
Thank you. That was wonderful, Marsha.
Alan, son, we love you so much.
Thanks for being here. Love you, Marsha.
Bye-bye.
And that's Marsha in Los Gatos. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder. And Bobby is fascinating with the near-infrared light effects that you're talking about there. It kind of ties in with another health story we had this week about how light therapy can target and kill cancer cells. Did you see that?
No, I didn't read that.
It's a new therapy that's being touted as the world's fifth major cancer treatment after surgery, chemo, radiotherapy, and immunotherapy.
Right.
It's called light-activated therapy. Basically, they make cancer cells glow in the dark, okay? And this helps surgeons identify the tumors and effectively get rid of them. They were doing a lot of trials with glioblastoma in mice for this, and they found that the treatment lit up even the tiniest of cancer cells and wiping out all those residual cells left over after surgery that often can cause the recreation of the cancer.
Because I remember they were using gold for some reason, and it would phosphoresce or attach it to some protein on the surface of the cancer cells, and then it would light up somehow. I had heard that they were doing some kind of research in that direction.
Well, this is considered what they call photoimmunotherapy. It uses a combination of a fluorescent marker, an affibody protein, I'm not sure what that is, an affibody protein, and near-infrared light that can identify and treat leftover glioblastoma cells in the mice. So after they remove the main tumor, they hope that it can be used for treating human glioblastoma, of course. It's another example of an innovative approach in research these days where it's a multidisciplinary approach where several different groups of professionals are working together. And cancer research looks like one of the areas where this may prove to be most fruitful.
Yeah, what they say is that the research demonstrates a novel approach to identifying and treating glioblastoma cells in the brain using light to turn an immunosuppressive environment into an immune vulnerable one. And then that has potential for therapies against aggressive types of brain tumors.
Because in order to remove brain tumors, the problem when it's in the brain, some of these glioblastomas, they're spider-like. They're not a round ball. They just kind of spread out.
So they could have a few cells way out on the periphery and other
body. A web. Anyway, and it's really hard for a doctor to just remove them precisely because they can't see them. They have to cut out big chunks of the brain. There's a lot of collateral damage, you know, that happens.
Right. So this lights them up so they're easier to see, and then they're experimenting with different treatments that are maybe light-based, frequency-based things rather than surgery so that these cancer cells can't grow. as opposed to needing to be surgically removed with all that tissue.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so light, once again, is starting to get photons are becoming more and more therapeutic. Who would have guessed?
Well, we like light. It sure sounds better than surgery.
Yeah, and then there's sound.
If you can do it with different colors of light, doesn't that sound better?
Sit in the sun, I like it.
Feel better?
Yeah. I've got this really funny. We have a minute here?
Yeah.
This was funny. Again, it was one of the producers from No Agenda sent it in. This will take about a minute.
Then we'll bring
in our caller. Yeah.
Okay.
This is about a blondie, a real blonde woman who does Kamala Harris, imitates her. Apparently, she looks like nothing like Kamala, but she's got it down. Listen to this.
Okay.
If you wake up, okay, and don't want to smile, if it takes a little while, okay, listen, open your eyes, okay, and look at the day, okay, you gotta look at the day, you do, and listen, you'll see things in a different way, okay, listen, full stop, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Okay, don't stop, because it'll soon be here, okay? It'll soon be here. It'll be here better than before. Okay, yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Okay, it's gone. And listen, full stop, it is gone. Yeah.
There you go.
That's hilarious. I like that. That's a pretty good imitation.
Comment on the background music.
Her name is Elke something or other, right?
So. I don't have her name handy.
I don't have her name handy. But she's a beautiful blonde. Adam Curry looked it up during the show.
Yeah.
That's fun. All right. Are you ready to say hi to Shane from Australia? Hi, Shane.
Hey, Shane.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Loving the program and sending my love. And Bobby, I was listening. You got a bit of a complaint there, mate.
He's getting better, but, you know.
He thinks he has Omicron.
Yeah.
Well, tested positive.
Yeah.
What I've been humbling doing for a couple of decades is fighting against the foreign corporatization of how they work our mental health. And I work with a lot of people in regards to one of the hardest jobs I've ever done. And it's actually because I've done a lot of work with getting people off alcohol and other drugs, but the hardest one I've ever sort of approached and confronted was getting people off psych drugs. These are all learning skills I learn about how the body can actually heal itself, Bobby. And the body will heal itself if you give it time. And I've just gone over a 3.5-day just water fast. I did prepare myself for this fast, and it really worked for my complaint, because I've got a bit of a complaint after a few injuries I got. But it does work when you just let the body declutter itself. So they say from the science that after 3.5 days, IGF-1 shuts off in your liver, and that's a major chemical for metabolizing all the gunk we're putting in our stuff, in our intestinal tract. The best one I'd refer people to, because I can ramble on, and I'd rather refer to the real geniuses that I study. And
yeah, who do you look at?
Guy on you, Dr. Eric Berg. Have you heard of him, Mr. Future?
Oh,
Dr. Eric
great.
Berg.
Yeah.
Bobby has.
Yeah. I've seen maybe 200 of his videos.
200 of them? My goodness.
Well, because he's into ketogenic diet, you know, in a big way. Yeah. He's great. Eric.
Yeah,
Eric
keep Berg. Watching him, Bobby. Keep watching him, Bobby, because he'll get, you know, I repeated, you know, as a modern Pavlovianist, and I'd love to give you a few examples of your social system in comparison with ours. Not now, I'll do it at another time, in regards to what I mean by modern Pavlovian generational corporate conditioning. Because we all do it, and I'm very aware of it, and you guys are pretty turned on. And you guys do it often too. You actually repeat yourself from your Pavlovian conditioning, what I call modern corporate conditioning. And you're sort of ringing the bell, but you're not really going for the food of thought or the real reality. And maybe you'll be able to think about that a little bit consciously.
Well, you give us an example, and I'll think about it.
Are you saying that we are repeating the mass the mass formation psychosis trigger words, but then we're not drinking the Kool-Aid?
No, something like that. As you know, Pavlov conditioned the dogs just to come one generation to come to the dog. To the bell in one generation.
Pretty fast, yeah. But, yeah, we're pretty fast too, right? We're mammals.
Well, we've been generationally conditioned ever since Pavlov did it with the technologies of film and now the incredible technologies of everybody's right next to a computer. So We are really being sophisticated. Well, I'll give you one example, Mr. Future.
Yeah.
And I study your media pretty all round, but you see it to a point, but you still go on about, oh, like voting may change the situation you're in, when from an outside observation, from a conscious person, most people would even see in just common sense, your voting is totally corrupt and there's no such thing as a vote. You're in a corporatocracy and you're being run by a corporate system that runs your whole political system, both federally and state.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's funny you mention that, because last night I met a guy who will probably be on the show soon, who is famous for being a founder of Anonymous, the hacker group. And,
right.
And one of their exploits was to really look at voting machines to see how hackable they were. I'm going to have a whole report on that. But it does look like that is a vulnerable part of the system. I'll just put it that way. And lots of people are aware of that. So the voting system as it is, I would agree with you, does seem to be possibly corrupt. And as a result, can we really trust the results of it? And it's something we really need to look at, because the smooth transition of power is really what democracies are all about. So what are
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And a lot of blokes died in both our countries for that in two world wars. I go for them because not the ones who actually supposedly represent us. I go for the ones who actually laid their lives down and risked their lives for other countries that had been invaded and taken over by people who wanted to really dictate, terms to those occupied countries. And we actually freed them. And I think that was a great sign of human consciousness and evolution that we should hold on to, no matter what the cost. I think it's really important. But look, we're going a bit off track. I want to really talk about Bobby, because I really care about Bobby.
Yeah.
I like Bobby.
Specifically and, about COVID, then, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Look, Bobby, what I've learned is, the other one is green foods and really living foods. It's like a piece of fruit. If it falls on the ground, it stays there for a while, and if an animal doesn't consume it, all of a sudden microorganisms come up from the ground and start consuming it and decomposing it. So we're sending off signals to our body all the time, mostly subconsciously, with the foods or intake we're having, even thought. And if we're sending putting living food into our bodies, then we're going to get a signal to our cells for life. But if we keep putting dead food in it, or even dead thoughts, then we're sending a signal to our bodies for decay. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah, I have lost my appetite in the last week. So involuntarily, I'm not eating as much. And I feel better. I don't have this urge to, especially sugary stuff that I used to crave. It's like it's all gone, which is probably good. Yes, and definitely the sunlight and infrared. Within a minute, I can feel much more energy. It's pretty incredible. So
I sunbake every day, Bobby, for about 2 hours, sometimes more. The other one is keep right away from your EMF fields and Wi-Fi.
Yes, I agree.
That's really important for your body.
Wow.
And earth as much as you can.
That's good stuff. Yeah, thank you, Shane.
Thank you,
Shane. All my best, guys.
Yeah. All right, thanks for calling, Shane.
You too, man.
Always good to hear from you.
Lots of love.
Yeah.
Right. Bye-bye.
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 Okay, welcome back to the show. Boy, you're getting lots of advice today, eh, Bobby?
Yeah, good advice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, for those who are just tuning in, Bobby looks like has a case of Omicron, probably BA4, BA5. I think those are the ones going around right now. And so far, so good. You're not going to be going to the hospital or anything close to that, right?
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
No.
No, see? But you might not be entertaining visitors. That's.
I don't think it would be advisable. My temperature did get to about 101 about a week ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I felt great the next day, but then slowly it started coming back again. And then last night I started to sweat again, which is good. So I feel a little bit better. I feel better after I heat up. Yeah, definitely.
That's great. Meanwhile, I thought this was interesting. There's a piece on how brainwaves could be used in criminal trials. I was curious about that. I was thinking of Philip K. Dick and pre-crime and predictive policing and all that. Mm-hmm. I was looking, what do they mean by this?
What are those truth tests called? Polygraphs? This is not a polygraph?
No.
Wasn't there a movie, it's something of the state? Enemy of the State?
Enemy of the State. That's what Catherine Austin Fitz.
She models her life. She says she was the enemy of the state, if you want to understand what happened to her.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what she says on inflation, too.
Uh-huh.
She's another interesting character to pay attention to at this point in time.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to this brainwaves. A lot of prosecutions occur because of eyewitnesses, mm-hmm. eyewitness accounts, and actual hard physical evidence of a crime is much harder to come by than eyewitnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 85% of the evidence for crimes is eyewitness. But eyewitness is notorious for being inaccurate.
Yeah, we call it he said, she said.
Yeah, but a lot of people have been wrongfully convicted as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something called a P300 brainwave that is a pattern that comes on when you recognize something.
Oh, so it's not even asking a question and measuring the truth of it. It's just recognition.
You show something to someone and watch their brainwaves, and if they have a P300 wave, there's a chance that they recognize it.
Is there a good example? Let's go to O.J. Do you recognize this glove?
You recognize this glove? Yes, dude. You recognize.
Looks like a glove.
Yeah.
I mean, how precise does this recognition have to be?
So if you're on the witness stand, do you have to have electrodes on your head and a doctor looking at the...
Now it's starting to sound like Clockwork Orange.
That would be a good YouTube movie.
We have ways of getting you to talk.
Yeah. Apparently, it's pretty simple. They compare it to the cocktail party problem, they call in psychology.
Uh-huh.
And that's where if you're in a crowded room and there's lots of conversations going on and you're not necessarily tracking them, right? It's kind of like a din of sound. It doesn't seem like you're tracking all these other conversations. You certainly can't remember them. But if any of those conversations mentions your name, your attention immediately goes over there.
Now,
how could this be? Are you tracking all the attentions?
Identity.
Or you have a buffer of names such as yourself that you're listening for all the time?
Well, I would imagine the way synapses work is they're bigger for things that have been repeated more often. And so you'll have a bigger response to something that you've heard as often as your name.
And it's identifiable brainwaves. So you recognize when you recognize something.
Right, a recognized pattern.
Your recognition pattern occurs. So it's kind of like that. And your brain recognizes something. The P300 seems to be very much connected with a meaningful stimulus.
I see.
Something that you've seen before.
And so we can use the P300
to
look for the elephant in the room?
Yes. Yes. So I've never seen him before, but your P300...
Tells a different story.
Tells a different story. Let's continue to cross-examine him. We know he's lying.
Private eye.
Yeah.
We have a new electronic private eye.
Yeah.
Gathering evidence as you speak.
Yeah. Well, they think they could free a lot of people. There's a lot of people that are in jail because of false testimony or inaccurate eyewitness memories.
Well, it seems like we're going to have all of these legal professionals who take depositions are going to be standing in line with the burger flippers at the unemployment office because the machines are going to take over their jobs.
Well, they should learn how to use these machines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's part of their job.
I see. No. They'll become the operators.
Yeah,
they can control the machines rather than be displaced by them.
Yeah, yeah. You want to incorporate them in terms of your intelligence, not exclude human intelligence.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a radiologist. Even though the auto docs can recognize cancer on a radiology diagram better than a real live doctor, we still need the doctor to tell you how to treat it.
Yeah. There's still a role for the doctor to play, thank goodness.
We're not excluding the human part of the system.
Keep in mind, there are cautionary tales with this technology, as you can well imagine. It's not without its pitfalls. A major threat to its usefulness is when relevant information is accidentally released to the public.
I see. When somebody spies on the detective.
That can happen too, yeah. Well, someone accused of a crime based on evidence from brainwave analysis could claim that the witness recognized their face from the press, thus skewing the results of the test.
Oh.
See, sure. So you can start getting
That occurs to me that recognition is itself a whole quagmire of, well, why is it recognized? What does that actually prove?
It behooves law enforcement to keep their cards closer to their chest.
I see. They have to
when it comes
gather
to
evidence in the dark.
Polluted recognition P300 waves.
Well, I imagine some of the types of recognition would have to be excluded.
You think?
Yeah. But categories of evidence, I'm sure they're vast. I'm sure there's lots of different types of things that would give an inside story that you couldn't get another way.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you, Big M. He thinks this is clockwork red.
I see.
Not just orange anymore.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hotter than that, huh? Temperature rising.
Yeah. Well, you like brainwaves. Ms. Future, you're doing a brainwave analysis or a brainwave program. You too, Bobby, for enhancing your brain.
Brain optimization. By using,
and then brain optimization uses brainwaves for optimizing brain function, right?
Yeah.
And both of you seem to have benefited from that.
I believe that we are really in a new era of medicine where we have a new understanding of the relationship of frequencies and medicine. And measuring your brain waves is just a part of it. The biofeedback era, when we were first starting to measure things like brain waves and then figure out what we could do with it, has matured. And now it's becoming synesthetic, where other senses, besides just the math of measuring the brain waves, we have all kinds of sensory stimulations like light waves and sound waves. And we have a lot of data about how the use of those things modifies the brainwaves.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a sciencey way of trying to measure something that we probably know intuitively, like we love music. Music can change our state of mind. Music can make us feel better. The vibrations of bells and chimes can lead to certain kinds of healing. There are all these different experiments that people do where just elevating their emotions using sight, sound, beauty, serenity, meditation, different kinds of thought forms. All these things have a positive effect on your health that is outside of our ability to measure it.
I remember some of the things that used to fascinate me were not so much the health-oriented ones as they were human potential, like the ability to learn a language through subliminal perception.
Do you know anybody who did that?
Yeah. There was a Bulgarian method of suggestopedia, I think it was called. And it involved listening to classical music and having subliminals going on that would teach you a language. And apparently it was very successful. So there's a lot of things. You've probably heard of that, Bobby, eh?
Well, I think Baroque music in particular.
Listening to Baroque while you're learning a language?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's the timing. It's the space between the notes. Yeah.
The space between the notes.
All right.
Yes, we're
let's
learning
go
occurs.
To a caller real quick before the next break.
Okay,
I think.
Let's bring on our caller.
Okay.
Who do we have here?
Mark in Soquel has something to tell us about brainwaves.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. What you guys were talking about with the reading your brainwave from the court thing.
Yeah.
I think it was Minority Report was the movie that they were.
You're right. That's right.
And is that also a PK?
I'm sorry, you're fading in and out. Say it one more time.
And was that also a PK Dick book?
Yes, it was.
It was.
Yes, definitely.
So another good one, I talked about this a little bit, is called Babel 17 by Sam Delaney.
Cool.
And he describes makes a good definition of how being able to read a mind state, and that our minds all leak out radio waves, you know, for lack of a better word. And the problem is that you would need a dish of several miles in surface area. But the answer to that is the human brain, if you spread it out, is several miles in surface area also. So it's being able to pick it up and tune it and whatnot.
Now, you're talking about a science fiction book, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I mean, the description of it was pretty, you know, plausible to me.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting. I think Dean Radin at the IONS Institute loves to study stuff like that. We have to go to a break, Mark. Appreciate your call.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling. Yeah, a lot to do about it. Brainwaves are the frontier. A lot of new stuff to discover there. There's a couple other things we could mention on that after the break. We'll see you shortly.
We have a call
call-in talk show, Law of the Land, Thursdays from 8 to 9 on KSCO. You get a chance to talk to a lawyer. Give me a call. I'm a lawyer, but you can like me anyway.
We're back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember hanging out with Dean at the last party.
Mm-hmm. Right, and Amy's birthday.
Yeah, Amy's birthday, right. Mm-hmm. One more thing I wanted to say about brainwaves. Entrainment. Entrainment's a fascinating thing. We've got a caller, Ms. Fitch. Okay, we'll be right there. I just want to mention that entrainment's kind of interesting because that's where you can train the machines to recognize your thoughts, to do things. Like, for example, if you have a screen, it shows you a circle in front of you.
Uh-huh.
And then the brainwaves of your brain are created as you're looking at the circle. Mm-hmm. Then the circle is taken away, and you can see how the brainwaves change. And then the computer learns how to discern when you're thinking of a circle.
Mm-hmm. And then, yes, so there's a signature pattern.
So it's entrained
almost like a language of alphabet letters for different kinds of thoughts.
You can just train your brain, and then you can get good so that you don't have to be shown a circle in order to generate the brainwaves of a circle.
Can you be fed the brainwaves, and suddenly you have a circle in your thoughts?
Or you can think circle.
Uh-huh.
And it would create the brainwaves of a circle, therefore analyzing your thoughts, you see?
Uh-huh.
But it requires...
So maybe this is why
Pavlov's
dog.
Yeah, it's the thought control or thought training. They're intimately intertwined, of course, but in order to have control, you have to have a language that you want to control. So this is evolving thought language, thought-to-matter
language. Well, it definitely is that very interesting zone of can computers think? Because if we can
It's an extension of us. It's not them. It's us, the computers, analyzing our brainwaves to give us control over things the computer controls, which is just about everything.
So you don't think they're thinking, huh?
No, this is not a thinking. I mean, AI could add another interesting Philip K. Dick level twist to this whole story where they take your own thoughts and turn them against you, that sort of thing.
A
cautionary tales. I don't feel like going there right now, Mrs. Future.
Let's take our call. How about we go to Dick in Santa Cruz?
Thank you very much.
It's been a while.
Hey, Dick.
Oh, hi. Yeah, you're talking about the brainwave stuff. Have you heard about the story that's kind of a fad with the Gen Zers or Xers, or where they use hemi-sync sounds in each ear?
Binaural beats?
Binaural beats, yeah.
I haven't heard about the latest experiments of the Bobby, have you?
Well, I bought all those satellite machines 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I did the hemi-sync. I've got the hemi-sync binaural beats. In fact, right now... I go to YouTube and 40 hertz gamma, just Google this on YouTube, 40 hertz gamma, and do the binaural beats or the hemi-sync version of that, and it will synchronize your left and right hemisphere. And for me as a dyslexic, that's my problem, is the two hemispheres are not in sync.
Oh.
And so getting information from one hemisphere to the other doesn't go freely, fluidly across. And so with this brain state therapy that I've been doing, it just kind of broke through that barrier between my hemispheres. And now that I listen to hemi-sync or watch this gamma 40 hertz
on YouTube,
it just opened up a whole new realm in my brain. It's incredible.
Exactly.
Have you had a similar experience, caller?
Well, I was going to just follow up with that about it being a fad on the internet, which I found very curious, because what Bobby was saying, I hadn't heard before. What I have heard is that these kids are getting high off of it, or really entering a certain, if they have, say, 100 hertz in one ear and 107 in the other, that your brain will cancel it out. They use this in the Monroe Institute for out-of-the-body travels, astral traveling. Inducing it in a trance state. In any case, what it does, it supposedly, according to Monroe Institute.
Yeah, I remember that. They were some of the pioneers in this, inducing out-of-the-body experiences.
Yeah, and Dean Radin uses that a lot, too.
What it does is it actually subtracts the two numbers, and you get 7 hertz, which is a theta realm.
Ah.
So we're talking about, you know, you go through your beta when you're talking, and we're talking together now. Then you go into an alpha where you're in a very relaxed state like meditation.
Mm.
And then you go to a theta, which is a real deep meditation where they can actually access this astral plane.
Mm.
And so I don't know how far, I haven't heard anecdotal stories. That's all I've heard about, you know, younger people using it.
Yeah.
Kind of like micro-dosing LSD or whatever you want to say. You know, they're we're getting into such fringe areas of consciousness that our young people are, I think they're partaking of it. And as far as my own, if you got a second, yes, I have used it. It's a very powerful, if you do the theta, the 100 and the 107 bilateral through in each year, you enter into a theta realm. And basically, it really kind of just, I did it a couple of times now. I meditate a lot, so, and I'm familiar with OBEs. It has a very direct, just like Bobby was explaining, in a way, I was very excited to hear that. I had a very intense, direct correlation with OBEs and sleep paralysis.
Out-of-body experiences.
So it really worked for you, then.
Pardon me?
Did you have to tweak it very much to get it to work for you?
No. You want to hear? I did a little experiment of my own because I just grabbed one off the internet. It was a 30-minute guided meditation, and then it just went into the sound for a while, and you kind of doze off to sleep. Hmm. That had vibrations and paralysis like halfway through the night. It was incredible. And then 2 weeks later, I got my nerve up a little more. I said, okay, I'm going to pick another hemi-sync thing that Bobby was talking about off the internet. And it did the same thing to me.
So frequencies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It might. Yeah, yeah. It's just like the Monroe Institute and how they get their people in 10 days to, because out of the body experiences are very difficult, mostly because of the fear factor and sleep paralysis. So if you can get past that fear and sleep paralysis, that's the fastest way, of course, to roll out of your body and go into alternate dimensions.
So you're saying it takes practice to get over the initial fear of...
Well, it did to me, because I'll tell you the truth, it was like basically facing your own death.
When you leave your body?
You've heard of the old hag, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sits on you, that numbs you out?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And sometimes sleep paralysis is accompanied by all kinds of hallucinations that you think you're going mad. You actually are scared the bejesus out of you, but that is just your subconscious mind at that point, because it's risen, like Bobby says, his mind crosses over between the hemispheres, so you have to control that, yeah, somewhat, to be able to actually get rid of the fear factor and go through. Once you do that, then it's easier, but then you get so excited, then you wake up right away. So
and so that's the next level of mastery right there.
This is really something. You know, we have just about a couple minutes left.
We just got a special emergency thing that came in.
And since we're talking about out-of-body experiences and brain waves and consciousness and things like that, here's the request. In a Salinas hospital in a coma right now is a young man named Risa DeAngelis. Reese DeAngelis called to ask that we all send our thoughts to a fellow who was in a motorcycle accident. He is the son of the Good Times astrologist, and they're asking if we can all just beam in some healing love prayers for him in the Salinas Hospital in a coma. So I just wanted to fit that into our conversation and ask.
Isn't that Rob Bresny? Isn't that Rob Bresny, the Good Times astrologer?
Oh. What's the boy's name?
Well, I don't have that in my note here.
I think because the Good Times astrologer is Rob Bresny.
So maybe it's Rob Bresny's son.
Yeah, he used to be a musician, a real Santa Cruz icon.
Yeah, so
very good.
Let's pray with our audience members for this beloved young man who was in a motorcycle accident. And I'm sorry I don't have his name, but it was requested by Risa DeAngelis. So
that's very nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all.
All right, everybody. Yeah, thanks for participating and calling in all these wonderful realms that we are exploring together for this audience of conscious adventurers.
Remember, have you heard of 9-volt nirvana? 9-volt nirvana? Yeah,
that's TDCS, transcranial direct current.
That was quite a fad a couple of years ago from what I remember.
Yeah,
9-volt nirvana was a Radiolab broadcast on that whole topic. Did anything ever come out of that?
Yes, there.
I jumped into that a little fast.
We should bring that up next week.
Okay,
there's so
much going on in that realm.
And, there's whole groups that are on that. And there's also TACS, which is alternating currents that have direct
currents. Oh, man.
That's supposed to resolve my dyslexia.
Okay, we'll look forward to doing that. And we also have Bruce Lipton on next week. Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, so we'll be looking at reprogramming the brain on some other levels.
Fantastic.
All right, everybody.